Hey ladies, good afternoon to everybody. We have a 2.5 hour extravaganza. Most class will have a break in the middle, but I'm teaching you both classes because Menucha is away today. And we use this as an opportunity to give you an overview of some of the key issues in Shemitah. Now, we did have some classes in this back in September, but the truth is we are still, we have a half a year of the Shemitah year to go. And not only that, the Shemitah year has repercussions far beyond the end of the Shemitah year. The fruit that comes on the market from now, really, the fresh fruit that comes in from the summer, will be on the market all the way through to the middle of next year. And then all the canned goods and things that find their way into the shops and the supermarkets, they can be with us for years and years to come. Not to mention wine, which lasts even longer, and therefore Shemitah really almost lasts sometimes until the next Shemitah year in some areas. Therefore, it is good to know what's going on. Yes?
Since Shemitah
Okay, we will. I will deal with all of these questions. I will deal with all of these questions when we get to these points. Gonna keep the question until we get there. I'm going to have to keep questions to a minimum, although I don't normally do that because we have a lot of material to get through, and I don't want to get sidetracked. Although that isn't a side question, that's a very good question, and we'll get to it when we get to it. Bezrat Hashem. You're going to hear a lot of jargon, a lot of new terms, a lot of new ideas. Imagine you were coming into a crash course in how to keep Shabbat, and you've never really come across any of the ideas of Shabbat before. It will be difficult to put that across in 60 minutes. The good news, however, is it's much easier to learn Hilchos Shemitah than Hilchos Shabbos. People get scared off by Hilchos Shemitah, and I don't think that's correct. Many seminaries, especially the post-high school variety, when the girls get here during Shemitah year, they basically tell the girls to almost forget Shemitah year. They'll work around it so that they don't have any Shemitah produce issues and they won't really come into contact with it, and they just get scared by it. We'll talk about why that hashkafically happens and whether there are any other ways to deal with it. I think that's unnecessary. The laws are not that complicated, and the consequences of getting it wrong are significantly less severe than Hilchos Shabbos. Meaning Hilchos Shabbos is a din d'oraisa. If you get something wrong, it can be chayav kares. All sorts of things can go wrong with it. On Shemitah, we will see that according to almost all poskim, it's a drabonon issue, bizman hazeh, in these days, and therefore the downside to actually doing something wrong is significant, but it's not something that you need to be scared by. You just have to learn the halachas and move forward. So, let's have a look at the sheet. I've brought you here a 12-page sheet. We won't be referring to every single thing on the sheet, but I'm going to use it as a structure to help explain Hilchos Shemitah. The following halachic issues arise as a consequence of Shemitah. First of all, there are a bunch of prohibitions dealing with how we work the land. I'm not going to dwell on those that much because most of us are not farmers. But you need to know a little bit about them. Some of the prohibitions are d'oraisa, some are d'rabbanon, leaving aside what I just said before, which is that maybe the whole thing is d'rabbanon, but let's assume for now that there's d'oraisa and d'rabbanon. You need to understand, and this you do understand, need to understand, what is the issue of svichin. Svichin means things that grow on their own. Fronds that grow from the ground, and we'll see svichin is a general term that you need to understand and remember, which refers to things that grew during Shemitah year itself. It could be flowers, it could be vegetables, it could be all sorts of things, and we'll see how svichin works when we get there.
They grow on their own?
Yes. All things that people grew when they shouldn't have grown them, which is a separate issue which we'll come to soon. Okay, did you send it up or down?
I made it cooler.
Cooler, that's fine, We'll survive. If you are in commercial farming, there's obviously a lot to talk about how to deal with that. Even if you have a domestic garden, which I suspect most of you don't here, but in Israel there are things that one needs to learn. What can you do, what can't you do, what if you have pot plants on a mirpeset, on a patio, there are things you can do, there are things you can't do. I'm not going to get into the details of those today. The best book that deals, I'm not an expert on Hilchos Shemitah by any means whatsoever, but the best book, the person who is, perhaps in the up-and-coming world of leading halachic poskim, is Rabbi Yosef Tzvi Rimon. In the religious Zionist community in Israel, Rabbi Yosef Tzvi Rimon, who is the Rav of Alon Shvutz, is a very significant halachic heavyweight, and he wrote a very good, accessible book in English on the halachas of Shemitah. What you tend to find, it's just called Shemitah, you can buy it. I don't recommend you buy it, it's not even that expensive. You can buy a Hebrew one, you can buy the English one. If you read that book from beginning to end, you'll know a lot about a lot. You cannot escape from hashkafic agendas when it comes to the issue of Shemitah. Some issues you can, you know, if you drop your fellowship spoon and your milk is washing up, there's not much of a hashkafic agenda that you can really ascribe to that. You can pretty much pick a rab out of yellow pages and ask what to do. When it comes to issues like Shemitah, we'll see, for reasons that will be evident soon, there are hashkafic agendas on every level. Rav Rimon, we'll talk more about that in the next year, where we talk about the historical background to this. But Rav Rimon's book, I think, is excellent on the halacha, and you will understand where he fits into the hashkafa as we go through. More important is the status, or for you anyway, the status of produce in the Shemitah year. What is Kedusha Shvius? The Kedusha, the holiness of the Shemitah year, what are its implications? How do you manage a kitchen with Shemitah produce? Again, some people are scared, and therefore they try to avoid buying produce which has Kedusha Shvius. This may itself be a problem. One of the things, because you're avoiding the Kedusha of Shemitah year, one of the things that we'll see is that there are no quote-unquote safe options during Shemitah. Some people like to think that there are, in the sense that, oh, I'm going to avoid any of the halakhic problems by buying non-Shemitah produce. Well, that's fine, you've avoided problem A, but then you fail to engage in any way with the opportunities of Kedusha Shvius, and also you fail to pay any account to the realities of what it means to spend a whole year buying non-Israeli produce. What implications does that have, not just on a hashkafic level, but on an economic level? How does that impact? Is that relevant to people, or is that not? We'll see how that comes up soon. And therefore, buying Shemitah produce and understanding how to use it is very important. Sometimes I feel people who say, I don't want to be bothered with Shemitah, I'm frying, that might break anything. Okay, I understand that, but it's a little bit like someone who says on Friday afternoon, you know something, if I break Shabbos, the consequences are so serious, just put me to sleep on Friday afternoon, wake me up on Motzei Shabbos, and I will not have broken Shabbos. Baruch Hashem. And the answer is, you're right. You will never have broken Shabbos. You run no risk of doing anything osa on Shabbos. But what did you miss? You never kept Shabbos. Because you miss all the opportunities that Shabbos has to bring. Shemitah can be seen also in that light. On a practical level, where do you buy your fruit? Where do you buy your vegetables? How do you understand the Hechsherim? This is a longer conversation that we'll have time for today, but that's something we need to talk about. What about eating out? What are the policies of the restaurants, the Rabbanut? What does the Mahadrin Hechsher do about Shemitah? What does the non-Mahadrin Hechsher do? Does it matter if it's in Yerushalayim or out? What about this new Hechsher Mahuderet? You need to understand a little bit what that is, which you may or not have seen. And all the alternatives to Shemitah produce, which we'll talk about. There's something called, on the other two issues, which we're not dwelling on a lot, there's something called Biur, which has not yet kicked in, which is at the end of the season of the Shemitah produce. You can't just keep those vegetables or fruit in the house. You have to do something halachic to them to remove them from the house. We'll talk about that a bit later. And then finally, which is coming up at the end of Shemitah year, which you might be here for, the idea of Shemitah's Kasafim, which applies according to almost everyone on a Doraisa level, even if the land might be Drabbanon, which means that loans, money that people owe you, Jewish people that owe you money, at the end of the Shemitah year, those loans are cancelled. And therefore, one has to understand, this is outside Eretz Israel as well, one has to understand the implications of that. If there's someone out there that owes you $10,000 and you were banking on receiving it, then you need to think about, if it's a Jewish person, how to deal with that halachically when it comes to the end of the Shemitah year, which again, we're not going to have time to talk about a lot, but you just need to be aware of it. In terms of Hashkafa, I put it at the front bottom of the page, there are a bunch of Hashkafic issues as well, and Hashkafa connects in with Halacha. I sometimes like to think of it like this, it's not Jewish Shemitah, but this is how I like to think of it. If you think of it as Halacha, okay, which is the actual practical application of the system, there's something which some people often call Meta Halacha, which are the underpinning rules as to how Halacha works. Woo-hoo. Don't worry about it. Very active pen. And then we have Hashkafa. Hashkafa.
What do you mean by Meta Halacha?
Meta Halacha is not the specific rule of the Halacha, but it's the broader halachic rules as to how to apply Halacha. Meaning, if you have a situation of suffix, of doubt, how do you go? Are you inclined to be Machmir? Are you inclined to be Makel? Why that is, etc. There's much more to talk about. It's a whole shir in of itself. Okay? But Hashkafa does have an impact on the halachic system, okay? And in Shemitah year, that applies no less than any time, probably many more than other areas. Let me give you some of the ideas as to the hashgafic issues that come up. First of all, is Kedusha Shvi'as, like I said, something to embrace, or a potential downside in the sense of problems, halachic problems, to avoid? Are you more of an ahava person, meaning seeking to do positive mitzvahs, or are you more of a yira person, which is seeking to avoid negative mitzvahs? And obviously everybody is both, and it's not, if you're all or nothing, then it's clearly wrong. But the balance between the two is very critical, and different communities reflect slightly different balances, all of which are legitimate, but different balances between ahava and yira in that sense. Do you see Shemitah as part of the process of the unraveling of the Geula? Do you see it as almost a messianic concept? That we dreamed about Shemitah, and it was an unattainable goal. And now, it's a total halakhic reality. Just like that happened with Shemitah, then next is who knows what? Tumah and Tahara. The ideas of purity and impurity, which to us seem to be completely abstract and inapplicable, who knows, maybe in 50 years, just like they dreamt about Shemitah, then that'll happen. And then Korbanos, and then this, and then that. Do you see Shemitah as part of that? Or is it another halachic issue to deal with like every other halachic issue? What is the implication of Medinat Yisrael on Erev Yom HaAtzmaut? This is probably the most apposite time to discuss this. How do you weigh the needs of the state in the halachic cheshbon, the halachic issue? Do you focus on the prati, my specific issues of halacha, or is your focus also on the klali? What impact will this have on Israeli industry? And people say all sorts of things. Are you now cold, by the way? You're all getting cold. Okay, no? All right. I'll give it 5 minutes and then I'll say make it work. For example, people say things like, when the Het HaMechira, which we'll talk about a lot, when the Het HaMechira first came in, it was like life and death issues. I'm sure you've heard this argument. And back in the early 20th century, they had to use the Het HaMechira because otherwise people would starve. But today we don't need the Het HaMechira, so it's inapplicable to apply that. But on the other hand, in the early 20th century, the total amount of agricultural produce in the land was a few thousand dollars probably. Now we have an agriculture industry of $1.3 billion. If this industry suffers significantly, that's a major issue. Is that just an irrelevance? And if you lose contracts, by the way, because people then buy from other suppliers, you can't just get them back next year. It doesn't work that way. If you lose a contract, you might not get it back for years, if ever. Therefore, how do you weigh this? How do you weigh the issue of supporting the local Jewish farmers as opposed to the local Arab farmers? Is that a point of politics only? Meaning, you do or don't want to support Arabs, depending on which way your political views go. Or is it an issue of halacha and hashkafa, which is, if there's a choice between a Jewish enterprise and a non-Jewish enterprise, should we support the Jewish one or not? That's a halachic issue and a hashkafic issue, not just a political issue. And all of these we're going to talk about more as we go through the sheet. Let's have a look. Turn to page 2. Let's look at the basic psukim. There are basically 3 quotes from the Chumash you need to see. Let's focus on the words that the Chumash actually said. Shemitah appears in basically 2 places in terms of the land, and then another place in terms of the loans. The first place is in Parshas Mishpatim, in number 1. It says, Shesh, v'shesh shanim tizra et arzecha. 6 years you will sow the land. V'asafta et tvota. And you will gather in the produce. So sowing and gathering is an activity for 6 years. But the hashvius, but the 7th year, tishmatena, has to be released. Shemitah, that's the word Shemitah. Unatashta, and lie fallow. The 7th year has to lie still. So what? The achlu evyonei amecha, so that the poor people from your community will be able to eat. So, first of all, it's very clear that there's nothing wrong with eating the Shemitah produce. On the contrary, the purpose of the Shemitah year is to take your hands off the land so that other people who don't normally get access to the land, the Evyonim, the poor, will be able to get free access to the land. The Yitram, and what's ever left after the poor have got it, Tochal Chaya Tasadeh, the animals will be able to eat. Open up your fields to wildlife. It's not just yours. Ken Tasel L'Charmacha, this you must also do to your grapevines. The Zeisech unto your olive trees. Meaning, so far we've seen this idea of not ploughing and reaping the land, but leaving it for others. Then I brought you the next pasuk, which is Shabbat. 6 days you will do your work. On the seventh day you will rest. So your ox and your donkey, again the wildlife will rest. And your servants will rest. And the stranger will rest. You see the parallel very, very clearly between Shemitah and Shabbat. The very next pasuk. Just like Shabbat is an opportunity to, if you like, remove yourself from the everyday system, the process of economic life. So too, Shemitah is the same thing on the seventh year. The idea, the link with Shabbat also is very important, because Shabbat is an acknowledgement that God created the world. So too, Shemitah is an acknowledgement that we don't create the world, but the world is bigger than just little us, and God creates the world. So when the Torah goes on in Vayikra, in Parshas Behar, talking about Shemitah, it gives it more details. Look at number two. This is the beginning of Parshas Behar. When you come to the land which I give to you, so here the first thing is the land will rest. It's not just you, the land will rest. A Shabbos for God. The land is dedicated to a spiritual Shabbos for God. 6 years you will sow your field. 6 years you will prune your vineyards. And you will gather in the produce. It'll be a Shabbat Shabbaton. The idea of a Shabbaton comes in the Pesukim. It'll be a Shabbos for the land. Shabbos LaHashem. Here you see the focus in this source is much less on necessarily the poor, but on dedicating it to God, and the land itself being having to be left. Okay? Sadchaloi Tizra. You mustn't sow the land, or prune the grapes. That sviach ketircha, and those things that grow by themselves, lotiksor, don't harvest them. That invades in izirecha, and the grapes that grow by themselves, lotiksor, don't collect them. Shnat shabbaton hi ela aretz. It'll be a special year of rest for the land. Okay, so who is it for? Then it comes in v'haisa shabbos haaretz lachem, and it will be for you la'achla, to eat. So when it says don't harvest them, it clearly doesn't mean you have to leave them on the vine to rot, because you have to eat them. So what does it mean, don't harvest them? So we'll see, it means don't harvest them commercially. You relate to your land as a private individual, just like everybody else in the world can relate to your land. You don't have ownership in the sense you can collect it all up, put it in a storehouse, and then sell it off. That you can't do. Lecha, because it belongs to you, ola avdecha, and your servant, ola matecha, and your women servants, ola schircha, and your employees, ola tshashavcha, and people who live around you, hagarim aimacha, those who are less privileged, those who don't have land of their own, ola ventecha, and your animals, ola chaya, and the wild animals, asheba atzecha, tiyel echol tzvoata alecho. Everyone has equal access to the land. It's a very, very interesting concept in many ways, this idea of stepping back from the ownership. Vasitim eschukatai, you will keep my laws. And then the next psukim, I'm not going to go through in detail, gives a brocha basically. That in case you think that how am I going to make any money? I'm going to take a whole year off. It's better than taking a day off every week, you know, on Saturday, it's a busy work day, and you expect me to work, you'll be able to make money, but I have to take a whole year off. So the psukim say, don't worry. This is also an exercise in bitachon, in having confidence that if you keep the mitzvahs, you won't suffer in the long term for them. That you will reap bumper crops in the sixth year, and you will get extra rain through, that things will grow, don't worry. It's interesting, this year has been a Shemitah year, and there's been enormous amounts of rain, Baruch Hashem, which is great. He said, don't worry, you'll make it work. You'll make it work. It's not viable on paper. Don't worry, the whole enterprise is not viable on paper. That's the nature of Eretz Yisrael. It's fantastic, but when you do the numbers and you crunch the numbers, the bottom line comes out red. That's the thing with the spies, the whole thing with the spies. The spies went to look at the land, and they came back and they said to Moshe, they said, look, you're right. This is a fantastic land, Eretz Zvat Chalav Udvash, but we've done the numbers, we've done the feasibility study, Moshe, and it comes out, it doesn't work, I can't make money here, you know? And Moshe says, look, that's the whole point, guys. You know, there has to be a leap of bitachon, and you'll see, it'll work out. That's a very, not that you have to take ridiculous risks in life, but the idea of making that leap into the slightly unknown is critical to the whole Israel venture. Those people who are unprepared to make that leap are the people who don't come. Okay? So, these are all the ideas of Shemitah. And then number three Then in number three, it says that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that we'll be sent into exile, look what it says. That Chem is Areh Bagoyim. This is also in the Chumash. I will send you out to the non-Jews. The Harikoisi Achareichem Charev. I will bring the sword after you. In other words, you'll be thrown out of the land. The Haisa Atzachem Shmama, and your land will then remain empty. The Areichem Yucharba, and your cities will be destroyed. As Tirtzeh Haaretz, then will the land be satisfied, as Shabsoseha, for all its Sabbath, all its sabbatical years, Kol Yemeah Yemeah Shema, all the days of its resting, Va'atem Ba'aretz Oyveichem, when you are in the land of your enemies, as Tishbos Haaretz, that's when your land will rest. Then you'll have to keep the Shabbos, meaning. And Rashi does a whole, in number four, when the Jewish people do go into exile, in Divrei Hayamim, and it says there that they were thrown off, Yisrafu et Beit Elokim, and they burned down the house of God, Yinatsu et Chomat Yerushalayim, and they smashed the walls of Yerushalayim. This is later on when they actually destroyed the first temple, Bekol Amoroseh, and all the palaces, etc., etc. Vayagal Hasheris min Hacharev, all the people were, the remainder of the people went to the sword, et Bavel to Bavel, Vayu loy Lebanav, Lavadim, and they were to the Babylonians and their sons as slaves. Then it says, Umiloy Tvar Hashem, this fulfilled the word of God, Bepi Yirmiyahu, in the mouth of Yirmiyahu, when he said, Ad Ratzta Haaretz Eshev Zeha. The land has to be able to keep its rest. Meaning, Rashi goes through a whole calculation that the 70 years of exile correspond to 70 sabbatical and yovel years that we should have kept, that we didn't keep, and therefore the punishment, as it were, for not respecting the sanctity of the land is that the land gets taken away from us. The land and us live in a symbiotic relationship. The land is not just inanimate in Eretz Israel. It responds to us. One of the greatest proofs on many levels, which is almost irrefutable, of the fact that the Jewish people have had a significant religious impact in coming back to Israel over the last 100 years, is the response of the land. How the land has, if you look at the writings of Mark Twain back in the 1860s, 70s, when he comes to Eretz Israel and he reports back, he has this whole, you know, I was going to say blog, but the equivalent, he has this whole thing where he says a traveller abroad, whatever, traveller at rest, something like that. When he says the land is God forsaken, nothing grows here, it's empty, it's dusty, it's dry, you know, a few blades of grass that goats eat. And now, you look around, this is a very interesting idea. When people say, well, nothing special is happening here, there's a certain ostrich mentality that's going on there. It's like, you know, walk through the shuk and tell me that nothing's happening and then read what was happening here 150 years ago. Interesting, also in Gaza. If you go down to Gaza, when the Jewish people had the settlements down in Gaza in the 90s, 2000, whatever, until they were expelled in 2005, so it was a major producer of all sorts of things, so vegetables of different types. It was a significant economic success. And now the areas that the Jewish people left in Gaza, you can go on a hill in Israel and see them, they're just empty hills full of sand. There's nothing there. There's nothing there. Nothing grows there, and nothing is produced there. It's just empty land. It's an amazing thing to see. It's incredible when you see that. They didn't replant it. They didn't resettle it. It's just empty. Now, let's get into the specifics of the details in the second half of the shir about what's going on. Now, in terms of planting the land, there are a number of Torah prohibitions. The following, and I'm going to go through this quite quickly because you don't need every detail. Planting things during Shemitah is a Torah prohibition, even non-fruit-bearing plants. Pruning things to help them grow is a Torah prohibition, and so is plowing a Torah prohibition. Okay?
Is this directly in the ground?
Yes, indirectly in the ground. So there are specific halachas. A pot which is growing inside the house, which is not connected to the ground, does not have the same halachas. There are things you can do outside the house. If it's open to the sun, there are different halachas. It depends on whether the pot has a hole in the bottom. It depends on what floor you're on. I'm not going to get into all the details. Look in Rav Rimon's book there. He goes into everything. If you have, put it this way, bottom line, if you're more than one floor up in an apartment building and your plants are sitting inside the house on a tiled floor or a hard surface, there's pretty much no problems of whatever you do. Once you start putting plants outside, or if you're on the ground floor of a building, even on a tile surface, you begin to get into Shemitah issues. And certainly if you have a garden outside, planting, plowing things, pruning things in order to promote growth is awesome. Yes.
Can you prune it to make it look nice?
Yes.
You could do it to make it look nice.
unless it's going to make it grow better. But if your primary concern is aesthetics, then that will see that. So you can cut the grass, for example, even though it makes it grow, but you're doing it for aesthetic reasons. If you look over to page 3, yes. Yeah. That's fine, because again, you're not doing it to try and make the tree grow. You're going to chop off the tree to stop it going in the power lines. But for example, in my son's yeshiva, there was a big storm in the winter, and one of the massive pine trees in the yeshiva gardens blew over. So you had this massive pine tree with all its roots sticking out, and obviously it's a very significant tree. They don't want it to die, but putting it back in the ground is exactly this. It's planting it in order to make it grow. It's not for power lines or for aesthetics. It's to save the tree, etc. And it's a Torah prohibition, and it's a major problem. I don't know what they did in the end. I didn't go and look, but that kind of thing comes up.
Could they cut the rest of it out and then remove it?
Well, they can remove it, but what are they going to do with it? Yeah, they can remove it. Let's go on. Page 3. Go to page 3. In addition to those activities on the ground, there are certain activities, min ha-Torah, that you're not allowed to do to the produce. Meaning what? You can't reap and harvest as an owner. You can't gather things as an owner. Meaning, you can't go to your vineyard and gather in all your grapes and put them in the storehouse in order to turn them into wine. That's not allowed. But what you can do is anyone can gather stuff from crops or from trees or from vineyards, small amounts of produce, a few days worth of food, in a non-professional, non-commercial way. Anyone can do that, even the owner of the field. And indeed, many people put signs on the field during Shemitah years saying, this field is Efka. You know, please be careful when you walk in and out, because I don't want you to just leave it open so that the whole thing gets ruined. But anyone is welcome to come in and to take whatever they want, because the food at the end of the day is Hefka. There are the Torah prohibitions of planting, reaping, pruning, etc., and also gathering as an owner. Now, there are a number also of rabbinic prohibitions, and this becomes very practical on a daily basis, which are as follows. The Torah, the Gemara, I should say, the Mishnah, lists 22 other categories which are called toldos, which are derivative activities, which are only prohibited rabbinically. Things like watering, weeding, fertilizing, etc. Those activities during Shemitah year are permitted if you're doing it to prevent the plant from dying. Okay? Not to improve the plant or to improve the growth, but to prevent the plant from dying, according to some authorities, to prevent the fruit from dying, you're allowed to do those rabbinically prohibited things. Now, just one important word of warning. In Shemitah, these things are prohibited on a rabbinic level, like watering and stuff. In the laws of Shabbos, these things are also Torah prohibitions. The two are not the same. So in the laws of Shemitah, there are less Torah prohibitions and more rabbinics, and the rabbinics have more flexibility, because the rabbi said that if at the end of the day your plants are actually dying, then you're allowed to do certain things. Therefore, you'll find we have a garden in the front of our building in Har Nof. And we continue to water the stuff there on a minimal basis in order to keep it alive, to stop it all from dying. You don't have to let everything die so that next September you can start all over again with new stuff. And therefore, you just have to be aware of that. Yes?
I heard you can grow food for your animals.
Well, you can grow whatever grows, but you can't plant food for your animals. No, you cannot plant food for your animals. You can harvest stuff, like for yourself, you can pick stuff that you need to give to your animals, but you can't plant stuff for your animals. No, you cannot do that. Stuff that grows by itself, grows by itself. Now, that's all I want to say about planting. What about dealing with Shemitah produce? How do you run a kitchen with potential Kedusha Shemitah issues? So, the Rambam here in number 5 points out an interesting thing. Stuff that grows during Shemitah, in principle, should be permitted to eat. Because there's no prohibition on eating the stuff that grows. But, and here's a big but, the rabbis made a rabbinic prohibition on something called tzbichin, which we mentioned before, which is they were worried that people were going to plant stuff sneakily on the sly and say, oh, they grew by itself, Baruch Hashem. Like, things grow by themselves, yeah? And therefore, what people are going to say grew by itself, actually, they were breaking Shemitah. Therefore, the rabbis made a prohibition on tzbichin. Let's see how this works. Number 5. Anything that the land produces during the Shemitah year, whether it's grain, Shenafal bo mikaidim shvius, that fell, things obviously fell off last year's crops, which seeds fell down and they grow. Beimin ha'ikarim, or roots under the ground. Not everything needs to be replanted. Stuff grows every year. Perennial crops, okay? Shenikzru mikaidim, okay? V'chazru v'asu. V'shnehim nikru sviach. These are all called svichim, these things that grow by themselves. They men are solving whether it's from grasses, hayirakos, the vegetables, sha'alumi aleim, they grew by themselves. Vein lem zera, hakol mutal achlum in haTorah. On a Torah level, all of this is permitted. Stuff that grows by itself, obviously fruit grows by itself every year. It grows better if you fiddle with the plants and prune them, but if you don't do anything, then apples will still grow on the trees the next year. Maybe not such good apples, but they'll still grow.
I'm sorry, what does pruning mean?
It means cutting bits off the plant in order to make the plant grow better.
Okay.
Yeah, if the plant's getting too big and it's diluting its energies, so you cut the plant back a little bit so it becomes stronger and it grows better fruit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and he brings the pasuk shneima v'hayis haShabbos haAretz lachem laochla. It'll be for you to eat. You can eat it. Fine. Then looking back, umidivrei seifrim, but on a rabbinic level, sheyu kol svichim asurim ba'achila. The rabbi said that anything that grows by itself, which is stuff that's normally planted, is also midrabbana. The lama gazru aleihim. Why did they make this gazera? Bifnei ovri avera, because people were doing averas. Shelo yelech, so people won't go by yizra tfu and plant grains or vakitnias or pulses or whatever. Vizironi gina, or garden vegetables. But toicha dehu b'seisa, secretly in their garden. Ukashi yitzmach, and when it grows, yoichel mehem, they'll eat it. V'yomen, they'll say svichim, oh, it grew by itself, like I just said. The pikach, therefore, osru kol asvichim hatsoimchim b'shvius. Therefore, anything that grows by itself that normally needs planting, the rabbi said is prohibited midrabbanan. But fruit, which normally grows without needing to plant it afresh every year, is not svichim. And therefore, the rabbis never made a prohibition on svichim. And therefore, in terms of the consumer, because most of us are not farmers, but we're consumers, the main issue for consumers when they're buying produce is, am I buying something which is rabbinically prohibited to eat? Because some guys planted this on Shemitah, and now it grows, and even though in theory what grows from the ground is mutter to eat min haTorah, and the problem is him, he's got the problem because he was working the land, that's his problem, nevertheless maybe it's rabbinically prohibited. Obviously we take rabbinic prohibition seriously. Chicken cooked in cream sauce is also prohibited rabbinically. You wouldn't eat that. Okay, so svichin is also prohibited rabbinically, you wouldn't eat that either. But fruit, by definition, will never be svichin. Meaning, even if he prunes his trees, and he fertilizes his plants, and he does all the naughty things that you're not meant to do during Shemitah year, and harvests his crop and sells it, from my perspective as the consumer of the apple, I have much less of an issue. Well, see, there are those that said that you shouldn't eat something which has been guarded and tended during Shemitah, but most poskim I actually make a lot of lenience on that. So at the end of the day, svichin, which we'll see referred to as a problem, is really a problem much more for vegetables than for fruit. And that will impact on the heter mechira. Even people that don't like the idea of heter mechira, don't want to eat heter mechira produce, they are more likely to be lenient with fruit than they are with vegetables, because the fruit doesn't have the svichin problem and the vegetables does. Okay, does that make sense so far? I'm getting a few blank looks.
Well, I just think we don't know, like, I don't know what has to be planted every year, what doesn't.
Okay,
yeah.
Fruit, apples, oranges, pears,
bananas
are not so straightforward, because bananas you have to replant on a regular basis. That's why bananas are bere pri adama, not bere pri ha'etz, because they grow in a different way. They don't grow on trees. Bananas don't grow on trees. New plants come out from the ground, etc., etc. But most of the fruit coming on the market now, grapes, and the strawberries are a vegetable. As a general rule, although it's not 100%, stuff which is bere pri ha'etz tends to be not svichin, and stuff which is bravery or dharma tends to be yes svichin.
Okay,
you need.
Svichin
means it grew during Shemitah year, it's a vegetable, and you, as a consumer, have a problem eating it. Have a look on the page 11 for a second. Because on page 11, I brought you, just in case you don't know all your vegetables, I brought you an interesting little chart here, which gives the svichin date. So, for example, if you look on page 11, you'll see there's a list of vegetables down here, and you'll see the kind of things that are there, artichokes and bananas and beets and broccoli and fennel, but you won't find apples and oranges and grapefruits and stuff like that there. You will see that it gives a Kedusha Shvi'ith beginning date, which is usually the beginning of the year, because Kedusha Shvi'ith for vegetables is when they're picked. And well, as soon as they're picked, in the Shemitah year, that gives them a certain Kedusha. But the Tzlichin kicks in at a certain point in the middle of the year. Meaning, most of the vegetables are already now in Tzlichin. What is Tzlichin? Tzlichin is that time in the year when the only stuff they're harvesting is stuff that already would have been planted during Shemitah year. For example, imagine that you have vegetables that you pull out of the ground 1 week after Rosh Hashanah. So that grew in the sixth year. That's not Tzlichin. Tzlichin is only stuff that grew during the seventh year that would normally have only been planted at the beginning of the seventh year and now being harvested. And therefore, you can see that the beginning of most of the Tzlichin periods is November, January, February. Pretty much all of it is now in an issue, and therefore vegetables now have a potential issur of Tzlichin unless they come from a quote-unquote kosher source, and we'll have to talk about what that means, although fruit is much less of a problem.
So when it develops a Tzlichin date, does that affect like what action you would buy?
Yes, okay. Yes, it will affect that. Now, let's go back to page 3 and talk about some of the practicalities. That's actually, Rachel, is the next point that I put down here. Vegetables that grew during the sixth year are not Tzlichin. And therefore, the beginning of the year, it was less of a problem. But now, the stuff is Tzlichin, because it's now growing, having been planted in the Shemitah year. And therefore, I put here, from the Tzlichin date, vegetables may not be bought from a store unless it has a Hechsher, which states the origin of the produce. Chana Sophia, you had a question, or are you just resting your arm? Okay, no problem. Meaning what? What a Hechsherim do? Hechsherim during Shemitah year tell you, on the whole, where things come from. Not just that they're kosher, but where things come from. And once you have the information to understand where they came from, you can then make an analysis as to what is its status in terms of Shemitah. For example, some produce may come from Belgium. That has no Shemitah implications whatsoever. We'll see that at the end. Other produce may come from near Eilat, which is in the modern-day state of Israel, but is beyond the boundaries, as we'll see in a minute, of the Shemitah area of Israel. That has a different status. Other vegetables may be produced by Arabs in Israel. That has a different status. And other vegetables may be produced under the Heter Mechira, which is worked by Jews under a special procedure that we'll see some people hold as acceptable and some people don't. Yet other vegetables may be something called Oitzer Basedin, which we'll deal with in a few minutes. Yes?
What about the places that are part of Israel?
Talk about that right now. In a few minutes, you'll see two little maps on the page. Have a look on page 4, please. Okay, you'll read about it, you'll hear about it, what have you. I'll give you some practical... On a practical basis, I'll give you some guidelines as to how to know when you're on safe ground or not safe ground, although, as I said, safe is a funny word for Shemitah, because if you're not doing this, you are doing that. So I brought you on the top of the page 4 here a number of options as to what your vegetables might end up being in order to, at this time of year especially, as I said. They may end up being Heter Mechira. I mentioned what the Heter Mechira is now. The Heter Mechira is a system, although it comes up later, which was developed, we'll talk much more about it in the second share, whereby certain farmers sell their land through the Rabbanut, through the rabbinic authorities in Israel. They sell their land to a non-Jewish owner. We'll talk about who that is and why they chose him later on in the next year. Then the land is owned by a non-Jew, and according to the Heter Mechira, that land no longer has Kedusha Shvi'is. It no longer has any kind of sanctity, and therefore you can reap it and plant it and all that kind of stuff, although we'll see that's not, it's not a full-blown heter for them to do anything. But from your perspective as a consumer, the produce comes out without any Kedusha Shvi'is, and they can be eaten normally. If a person holds by the Heter Mechira. There are many poskim, as we'll see, who took the view that the Heter Mechira is invalid for all sorts of reasons, which we'll talk about. If it's invalid, then that's just straightforward produce which has been planted and reaped during Shemitah, and therefore you as a consumer have the problem of Tzlichin, which is vegetables which are planted and grown, they're rabbinically prohibited.
During Shemitah.
Correct. So Kedusha Shvi'ah, Heter Mechira produce is of that nature. Yes, on land, that Heter Mechira by definition applies to land owned by Jews. You might find this Oitzer Basedin, which I'll define in a minute. Matzah Menutak is something you will also find, and it will label it. It will label it. Matzah Menutak is vegetables, usually not fruit, but vegetables grown in beds which have been detached from the ground. either hydroponically without any ground at all, or in soil or whatever that has been, is no longer, is in sealed units with a roof over them, grown under, if you like, unusual conditions, which mean that they do not have to produce shvi'as. That is a fairly quote-unquote safe bet, on the basis that most folks can hold that yes, they are not Shemitah produce, it's the equivalent to growing stuff in, on your third floor of your building inside the house on your tiled floor. Of course, what you lose is Kedusha Shvi'as. If you're into trying to get Kedusha Shvi'as, these vegetables are just regular, which some people might say is an advantage, and others might say is a disadvantage, but nevertheless, matzah menutak, spelled matzah, not spelled with a hay, like what you put on paper, but matzah like this, which means a bed, menutak means detached. Okay? I'm just going to go off for a little bit. Because
is that a greenhouse then?
Yes, it's like a greenhouse, but it's not. Most greenhouses are stuff still in the ground. This is in bags, okay? Let's define this other term. Yuvul Nochri. Yuvul Nochri means produce of a non-Jew. Yuvul Nochri really means produce grown in Israel by non-Jewish workers and owners, not just workers, which usually means Arabs, because they are the non-Jewish people that live in Israel. Yeah, and own land who are not Jewish. Yuvul Nochri is produce grown, therefore, by non-Jews in Israel. That, according to many poskim, also does not have Kedusha Shvi'as. Okay, doesn't have the Shemitah sanctity. And therefore, people might try to buy that in order to avoid problems of Kedusha Shvi'as. But we'll see that's not such a safe option either, because it brings in all the implications of only buying from the non-Jewish market, which there are issues with on many levels. And also, it's not so clear whether it does or doesn't have Kedusha Shvi'as. There are other postings that say, even if you sell the land to a non-Jew, or if the land's owned by a non-Jew, it still has Kedusha Shvi'as, but the Haredi world on the whole will run to that particular option, what's called Yivul Nochri. Sometimes people call that Shmita Lechumra. You may have heard of this. Shmita Lechumra, which means we're keeping Shmita and being extra machmir. I tell you now, this is a misnomer. This is not an accurate description. Okay? Because it is not lechumra in every area. It is lechumra in this particular area, which they've decided to be, say that the area is, this is the area which we want to be maximum. But it conveniently ignores all of the implications which are actually being lenient in other areas. By the way, it's not just one community that has these misnomers. The Rabbanut, the religious Zionist community as well, has something called Shmitah Kahalacha. They have a hashtag called Shmitah Kahalacha, which I think is even worse, which implies that everyone else's Shmitah is Lo Kahalacha. So whatever you say on these things, you end up upsetting somebody. Fine. One of the things you need to look for on a hashtag, just if you want to be very practical, okay? Here on page 4 it says, in stores, look for the following words on the hashtag. Lalo Chashash, sometimes it says Tevel, which is Trumas and Masjus have been taken from it. Shvi'it. Lalo Chashash Shvi'it. The Loch HaShash Shvi'it means there is no problem of Shvi'it, of Kedusha Shvi'it, on these vegetables, which will either mean it comes from abroad, or it comes from non-Jewish farmers, or it comes from bags which are grown detached from the ground or something, but it means it's not Heter Lechira, and it's not going to be Oitzah Beisdin, which we'll talk about what that is in a minute. Okay, fine. So, let's say you want to engage with Kedusha Shvi'it. And again, there are different approaches as to whether this is a good thing, a dangerous thing, an exciting thing, an opportunity, etc. What can you and what can you not do? What are the vegetables that will have Kedusha Shvi'as? So really the vegetables that are likely to have Kedusha Shvi'as are the things that are now sold in a system called Oitzah Beis Din. What is the Oitzah Beis Din? So again, this might be new to some people. Oitzah Beis Din works like this. What's that? Everything's on here. It actually says that at the top of page 4, and later on it talks about it more as well. I'll go through these solutions with you later as well. Oitzah Beis Din is as follows. If the local farmers make a cooperative, and they basically sell their entire, or they give over their entire operation to be run by the local Beis Din, it's not that they're selling their land to a non-Jew, because selling land to non-Jews in Eretz Israel is itself halachically questionable for various reasons that we'll see. But if the whole operation is run basically by a cooperative, so what happens is that the Beis Din are running the business, nobody's making profit, nobody's harvesting for commercial purposes, the food is cheaper because all you're paying in the shops is the transportation, distribution costs, and basic, you know, workers picking costs, etc. But no one's harvesting it for profit. According to most poskim, Eitza Beis Din does work. Okay, it's more accepted than Heter Mechira. And the Eitza Beis Din system will give the food Kedusha Shvias, because at the end of the day, it is picked by Jewish farmers or Jewish land. Well, actually, it's usually picked by non-Jewish workers, which is the normal way that the people pick things. But in this country, because most of the farm workers are non-Jewish. But the Eitza Beis Din system will actually allow you to buy Kedusha Shvias produce in the shops and eat it with Kedusha Shvias. Now, most of the Haredi world in Israel does not go for Eitza Beis Din, not because they say it's not kosher, because the Chazon Ish himself, which was the leader of the Haredi world in the 40s, 50s, was very much in favor of the Eitza Beis Din, but because, again, it requires you to engage with Kedusha Shvias, which is something that many people out there say they'd rather not have to do, so they go for the non-Jewish Yuval Nochri imported food options. But the religious Zionist community is more likely to incline towards Eitza Beis Din, because Eitza Beis Din actually gives money to the Jewish people who are working on the farms. It stops the contracts going to non-Jewish operators, and it also allows you to eat food which has Kedusha Shvias in it. And there are shops all around Yerushalayim and other cities in Israel which sell Eitza Beis Din produce. Literally, the Eitza Beis Din means the Bet Din storehouse. One of the firms which is selling Eitza Beis Din is a firm called Otsar Haaretz. You may have seen this. You've seen this in Har Nof, they have an Otsar Haaretz shop. So in Otsar Haaretz, in the shop there, so they have all the food labeled. This food comes from abroad, and this food comes from southern parts of Israel without Kedusha, and this food is grown on the detached bed, and this food is grown on the Eitza Beis Din produce and has Kedusha Shvias. So everything you buy in the shop, you know, this does have Kedusha Shvias, this doesn't have Kedusha Shvias, etc., and you know what you're buying.
Which store is that?
There's one, the only one in Har Nof is one on Agassi, around... No, it's not on a corner, no, not really. It's right. It's, I don't know what the number is, Agassi. It's further down from Sharim, towards, you know, Vishnu.
Yeah. Oh.
Okay, further along Agassi from Sharim. Yeah.
So can you see? Like, I went to the Rami Levy next door, which is not on the Hagen Rami Levy.
Right, they will not sell Eitza Beis Din produce.
They had something that was Otsar Haaretz.
Oh, did they? All right,
yeah,
so I'm wrong.
It was like the bad, you know, pre-cut lettuce. So, does that mean that it has Kedusha?
You have to read. Not necessarily. Eitza Haaretz just means that it could be from one of a number of different places.
Okay.
And it will say, it will be labeled very clearly as to what it is and what it is. It doesn't automatically mean it has Kedusha. Yeah.
So, can you explain
again what Eitza Beis Din again is where the farms, Jewish farmers, rather than commercially working and harvesting the land, they give their operation over to the local Beit Din, which runs that operation. They form a Beit Din for this purpose, they run the operation, distributes the produce, but what you're paying for is not profit to the farmer on the produce, but it's just the basic distribution costs. Okay? Which means the food is Jewish-owned, Jewish-grown. It doesn't, by the way, Eitza Beis Din doesn't help you to farm the land. You can't plant anything with Eitza Beis Din. All it does is enables you to harvest it, get the produce out there, in a way which is kosher, quotes and quotes, and it will have Kedusha Shvias. Okay, I need to go on. I'm sorry because I only have 10 minutes. What do you do with Kedusha Shvias produce? So go to page 4 for a second. There are various sources of gruel. The Rambam talks about this. Others talk about this. Kedusha Shvias produce has to be treated in a certain way. According to some opinions, there may even be a mitzvah to eat Kedusha Shvias produce. Although this is debated and it's not at all clear, and it may be that there isn't a mitzvah to eat Kedusha Shvias produce, but people will often say that there is, because that fits with their hashkafic agenda too. There's nothing wrong with that, but that's only according to one opinion within one opinion, that there is a mitzvah. I brought you the opinion number 9, the Ramban. And therefore, some people really try to get hold of Kedusha Shvias produce, and as I put here, various options will, you know, hit your table, including vegetables and fruit and grains and various things. I put here at the bottom of page 4, how do you know whether it has Kedusha Shvias from the 7th year or whether it's from other years? It'll depend on when it's picked. According to vegetables, it's when they're picked. According to fruit, it's when they grew. According to grains, it's when they grew to a third. So there are various things which I can't get into all the details of now. But on a practical level, if you bring Kedusha Shvias into your kitchen, that's fine. But there are just a few things you need to be aware of. Look on the top of page 5. It says in the Ketzachim, the Kedusha Shvi'it, it says, La'oichla, Amar Rachmane, it says you can eat it, which means eating it, v'loy lehefsed, and you're not allowed to waste it. Means if you're dealing with Kedusha Shvi'it's produce, you have to try not to let it go to waste. You can't waste it, you shouldn't spill it, you shouldn't leave it. If people are putting a lot on their plate in Kedusha Shvi'it and they're leaving it behind, that's not the right thing to do. They should only take what they want. It shouldn't be thrown in the garbage if it's edible. What people do is that they have a little Kedusha pot, Kedusha Shvi'it pot in the kitchen. We have a little thing on our kitchen table. And if there are leftovers or stuff that didn't get eaten, is not going to be eaten, and they're still edible, you just put them in a bag, put them inside that pot for a day or two or three until they're basically no longer edible, and then they can be thrown in the garbage. But the edit, it's always mutter to take Kedusha Shvi'it's produce and just put it straight in a bag sealed and throw it straight in the garbage. That's also okay as well. And some institutions, if they're dealing with Kedusha Shvi'it, that's what they do, because they can't start messing around with little pots all over the place.
Only if it's still edible?
But if it's not edible, it's not a problem. It's therefore peels that nobody would eat, and also that animals don't eat, it's not a problem. What's that?
Banana peels,
to what? It's interesting. Banana peels, actually, as far as I'm aware, the post can say is not a problem because nobody eats banana peels. Animals don't eat banana peels either. Monkeys eat banana peels. Rav Ramon says the banana peels.
Yeah, the thing we have from the first one says you can throw a banana peel away.
Right,
I know that pepper, a lot of their community is eating right now.
Right.
The top of the pepper with the seeds is not edible. Nobody eats.
Okay, so stuff on the fruit which is totally inedible, which you wouldn't give to people, can be thrown in the bin. Stuff which wouldn't be given to animals can be thrown in the bin. Again, the downside is, if by mistake you threw away something which was Kedusha Shvi'it that you shouldn't have thrown away Kedusha Shvi'it, so by accident you did an Issur Rabbanon, because the Kedusha today, according to the most posting, is the Rabbanon, you know something? You'll try harder and you won't do it wrong the next time. But it's something you should get right, but if you get wrong, I know, and I'm telling you this is something I heard directly, that somebody told me they were told by their teacher if they misused Kedusha Shvi'it's produce by mistake, they would get cancer. I'm not lying. I'm not lying. So the extent to which people are scared and scare other people, this is not a normal way that people are taught, but I'm just telling you, God forbid someone should ever happen. But they were told that it's so scary you should do it right. You shouldn't get it wrong. But if you get it wrong, it's not the end of the world. Okay?
No one says Shabbos like that, though.
What's that?
No one says, like, if you break Shabbos, you can get cancer. Like,
By the way, they do as well. But okay, forget that. That doesn't matter. But because that person, whoever heard that, was taught, I don't know who they were taught by, and it's a ridiculous thing. But at the end of the day, Kedusha Shvi'it is not something which should scare people. They should try to get it right, but if they get it wrong, it's not the end of the world. Yes? No, on the contrary, what's disrespectful is to throw it in the garbage.
No, you have a special little compost bin, or you have a little container. I'm from Seattle, so we do a lot of compost.
Okay.
It's so disrespectful to, like, put it in a plastic bag.
Well, you're thinking from a recycling perspective. Really, you're in a recycling mood.
Sure.
And we're not talking from a recycling perspective. What we don't want to happen is for the food to be lying on a garbage thing. Even in a garbage compost heap, okay? To throw the food in the garbage is also, but to put the food in a plastic bag might not be better for the recycling, but it's better for the halacha. Halacha and recycling don't have to go together.
I can't get over it. It's so disgusting.
Why did
it?
First of all, if you don't mind me saying so, the word disgusting is quite a strong word to use for putting food in a plastic bag. I understand that, but I mean, there are things in this world which are disgusting, and that might not be desirable, but it might not be disgusting. Yeah.
Can you
put it in a biodegradable bag? Something. Put it in a biodegradable bag. Guys, environmentalism is important. It's important to say that, but it's not a religion. It's not a religion. And therefore, don't treat environmentalism as some kind of avera. If you want to put it in a biodegradable bag, then do. That's very nice. Very nice. And then, you know, put it in a paper bag. You know something? Forget I ever said the word plastic. Right. Forget I ever said that person was told they were going, God forbid, cancer. Forget I ever said that. Just forget the whole thing. Scrub the whole thing. So you put the food in a biodegradable paper bag inside the Shemitah thing, and then when it gets thrown into the garbage, the world is saved, and you also go to Shammai. No, I'm being a bit flippant, but in all seriousness, you have a good point. If you can do it in a way which is environmentally friendly, why not?
Can you bury it in the ground after? I've heard someone say that you can bury it in like every time you have the leftovers.
Once it's rotten, you can do what you like with it.
Okay.
Once it's rotten, you can put it through. You can turn it into. What's that? No, not exactly. Well, only if it's seed. I'm talking about peels and things like that. If you okay, fine. Here's the thing. You're getting yourself into all these problems because you're not prepared to put it in a plastic bag. You know. So don't, you're right, I mean planting stuff because you don't want it to, let's go on a little bit. Because I've only got a couple of minutes and we need to move on. Sorry, I need to just go on a little bit. I want to just mention another couple of things about Kedusha Shvir. You don't have to be OCD about it. Meaning, stuff which is like stuck to the plates that normal people would throw away, you know, with the washing up, you don't have to scrape it off and put it in the plant. It's just like big pieces, chunks of things which you're going to end up throwing away. You should do this, what I've said. You shouldn't be eating Kedusha Shvi's food in an abnormal way. Meaning, if it's stuff that's normally eaten cooked, it should be cooked. If it's normally eaten not cooked, it should be not cooked. If it's not normally blended, it shouldn't be blended. The truth is, in this day and age when pretty much everyone does everything to everything, there are less things that nobody does to food. By the way, it's not about nobody. It's a significant. I have this Shiloh right now because I like smoothies in the morning. And now this time of year, you know, the fruit comes on the market, you can start throwing them in and making smoothies. Can you do that with Kedusha Shvi's fruit? And the answer is yes, if a significant group of people out there do this to the fruit. That's called the normal use for the fruit, and then that's fine. And
therefore, even if it's significant,
because
the people didn't do it.
No, but you are, because if you do something to the fruit, which is an abnormal thing that you don't normally do, then that's a problem, okay, in halacha. Let me just say a couple of other things before we finish. I brought you on pages 5 and 6 some maps, you can look at them in your own time, of areas of land which Shemitah applies to. Basically, there are three areas. There's the area which is completely outside Israel, there's no Shemitah implications at all. Then there's the area which was captured by those people who came up from Egypt, when they came into the land of Joshua, that has a certain Kedusha. And then there's the land which was settled during the second temple period. That is the core area which has Kedusha Shvi'ah. The implications for that, for us, is that stuff which is harvested from down near Eilat, what we call the southern Arava, does not have Kedusha Shvi'ah. Because that land was never included in the land which was settled or captured on any of those occasions. And therefore, one of the things that you find in the shops is food which is labeled as being southern Arava, that doesn't have Kedusha Shvi'ah, so that's where that's coming from. A couple of other issues, and then I'll just let you know what's on the rest of the sheet so that you can see it. A few of the Kedusha Shvi'ah issues, as Sharon pointed out before, it should not be exported to Chutz La'aretz. Kedusha Shvi'ah has to be eaten in Eretz Israel. Now, a lot of the stuff which is exported shouldn't have been exported. It's Shemitah produce, it's stuff which was grown maybe by non-religious people, not even Heter Mechira, because Heter Mechira is not automatic. You have to actually sell the field, and therefore people in Chutz La'aretz have to know what to do with this. It's not just a straightforward question of eating everything that comes on, but it depends on what they buy and how they buy it. I'm not getting into a whole thing now. If you're interested in guidelines for people in Chutz La'aretz, then I have a whole thing at home which is produced by my Rav in London as to guide people in London as to what to do with the Shemitah produce that comes on the market. When you guys go back to America, that's when it's most likely to be applicable, because the fruit which is coming on the market, you know, in the end of this year, is the Shemitah fruit. Other things that I would just mention is as follows. Look on page 7. I've brought you a kind of blow-by-blow and pros and cons to all the different solutions that I mentioned. And I'll maybe just bring them to your attention. Oitzah Beis Din on page 7, which I described as the kind of the collective, which does have Kedusha Shvi'ah, where you're only paying for distribution costs. It has certain advantages. That's problematic in the Heter Mechira, but it has disadvantages as well. It's not a halachically 100%. It's hard to actually supervise. It doesn't allow you to plant. Only allows you to actually bring the stuff in and sell it. Matzah Menutach, which is the beds which grow off the ground, have certain pros. you know, it's bug free and it supports Israeli agriculture, but it's expensive, it's hard to get hold of, it's not a supply which you can rely on. Shishis, which is not really irrelevant now on page 8, which is stuff that grew in the 6th year, there's not much of that left now, we're getting out of that season. Imported produce is great, but again, you have to ask, do I really want to be buying dafka things from Chutz Laaretz when I could be buying things from Eretz Israel? That's relevant. We have just started, again, importing vegetables from Gaza. The Israeli government, as of March 2016, once again opened up the import system from Gaza. So most of the imported produce comes from Egypt and Jordan, but some of it now comes from Gaza as well. And you can also have your own position on whether that is good, bad, or indifferent. Hekel Mechira, we talked about the pros and the cons a little bit. We talk more about Hekel Mechira in the next session. Southern Arava, we talked about. Yuval Nochru, we talked about, which is non-Jewish people who own land in Eretz Israel. There are halachic issues with that as well. What do people in Israel do? You might find this of interest. At the bottom of page 9, I brought you my take anyway, my take on what people in Israel normally do. The Haredi world tends to go for Yivul Nochri, what they call Shmitah L'Chumrah, meaning stuff which is non-Jewish, non-Jewish from Israel, non-Jewish from Chutz La'aretz, etc. And way down on that list comes Hetzer Mechira, which people don't normally touch with a barge pole, if you say that in America. But you know what I mean. With a barge pole. With a tent pole? Tent foot pole. You don't touch it with a tent pole. Don't worry about it. It's not relevant to Shemitah. The Haredi community, generally speaking, regards Hetzer Mechira as trade. Now, to the point that some people say, no, seriously, some people say you have to cash the pots and pans afterwards. Now, that is not a ridiculous position. One has to learn why they're coming from that, why they understand it to be not kosher. But that, I would say, is the more extreme position. The more mainstream Haredi position is that the Hetzer Mechira is undesirable because of all the halachic issues that come with it. But in situations of emergency, I know many Haredi poskim that will allow, for example, with parents or this kind of thing, eating Hetzer Mechira. The religious Zionist community, there are different approaches. They tend to go more for the Oitzer Beis Din, because the Oitzer Beis Din solution, by the way, Oitzer Beis Din had a massive boost this Shemitah, because the army decided to go Oitzer Beis Din at the beginning of Shemitah year, which is a big deal. Yuval Nochri, non-Jewish produce, and they decided to go Oitzer Beis Din, which meant that the army had to deal with Kedusha Shvius as well, which is very interesting, which more about that in the next year. But the religious Zionist community tends to go with Oitzer Beis Din as a higher, or even Hetzer Mechira. There are some people that feel, as a matter of halachic and hashkafic imperative, that supporting Israeli agriculture in the greatest way possible is an absolute halachic imperative, and therefore they go with Hetzer Mechira L'Chatzila. Ideally, the Hetzer Mechira is something which one should eat, not just one can eat, but one should eat, because it has the solutions that the other systems don't have. And again, the thing to do here is to ask your posek. I don't know if the school itself has a policy. Next year, when we have the talk about the historical background, we'll talk a little bit more about what the hechsherim in the restaurants do today, as far as Shemitah is concerned. Because that you have to understand the background and where the rabbanut's coming from on that. But halacha lemaisa, I think it's perfectly possible to negotiate your way around Shemitah in a way which is hashkafically healthy, whichever hashkafa you decide to come from, and I'm not saying one's better than the other, and also halakhically accurately, and hopefully that's something that you'll be able to do. More about this soon. I'll give you like a 10-minute break, and we'll have the next class. Because it's me. Well, no, it's about something. Well, it's about Shemitah, but it's from a totally different perspective.